The two aspects of consciousness that we'll be dealing with this evening are soul and spirit. What is man? What are we? The products, the progeny of our parents? Are we merely these physical beings that walk along the surface of the earth and we're born of our mothers and spend a season here and die and that's the end of us? Is that what we are? Abraham Maslow said, Freud's picture of man was clearly unsuitable, leaving out as it did his aspirations, man's aspirations, his realizable hopes, his godlike qualities. Mind or spirit or spiritual values do not soar someplace higher in space or above the body, the animal, the instincts. A whole school of psychologists now believe that spiritual values are in the organism, so much a part of the well-functioning organism as to be the source of the defining characteristics of it. Religion has tended to send us off to some other place to find where spirit is. And all the while, the residence of spirit has been within ourselves. We really will not discover or experience God or spirit until we make that discovery within ourselves. There is something in us that is experienceable. And the something that is in us is more than we have judged ourselves to be. The first idea that I would like to share with you this evening is that we really do not learn very much until we come to know that we do not know very much. And especially until we come to understand that things are not the way they appear to be. If you will look at my hand, it seems to be solid matter, doesn't it? Actually, it's more full of holes than chicken wire. My hand is so full of holes that I don't understand why it doesn't leak, why all the juice doesn't run right out. But that's not the way it is at all. The body is not the stepchild of spirit, of the animating forces within it. In final analysis, the body is the full partner of the spirit. The body is but the outer manifested reflection of what you don't see. The part that you see is very confusing because it is not the way it appears to be. It appears to be a solid thing, and it is not at all. Why, the body is no more than, what is that stuff that they put on strawberry pies? Meringue. Well, you know how meringue is. You can run your finger right through it, and, you know, it's kind of finger-licking good, isn't it? But there's no substance to meringue, and yet if you look at a pie, it appears to be something that's pretty solid. You look at this physical body, and it is not what it appears to be at all. Now, the point I'm making is this, that the part that does not seem to exist, the invisible part, the part that you cannot see with the eye, is everything. Now, that is where the real thing is. It's the cause. The body, the manifested part, is but the effect. Do you see how we have tended to reverse or invert our thought process, our awareness process? Our senses, our sense mind, that part of our intellectual mind that is coupled to our five senses, connects us directly to manifested things, to the, what was that stuff again? Meringue? Yeah. We keep looking at the meringue, never seeing the pie that's underneath it. The growing spirit or soul can keep on growing throughout its days until at last the body is held together by nothing else. Did you know it's possible to live serenely in the midst of turmoil? To never be diminished in the face of any adversity? Did you know that? Most people do not know that. Most people would fight to save their physical lives, but have no concept at all of the struggle that's required to save our minds, our consciousness. Are you aware of how much effort is made to conserve or to establish or to move or to work with outer things, and how little effort is made to take charge of inner things? Well, it's possible for the life of your mind to be so elevated, to be so in tune with the spirit that permeates this universe. You see, back of the visible universe, alongside it, with it, vibrating in a way that the eye cannot see, there is the spirit of life. We live and move and have our being in it. And the moment that our consciousness is awakened so that we begin to vibrate with that same perfect harmony, then there begins to become an experience in us and all around us that is so far above human understanding as to not be able to be put in words. And this is the higher consciousness that is our destiny to experience. This earth is a schoolhouse, and we're upon it to grow in consciousness. Why do you think the scriptures say, seek you first this higher consciousness, the kingdom of God consciousness, and these things will be added unto you? We've been working with the things. Now, the things are marvelous, wonderful, and we do have responsibilities. But these responsibilities are our opportunity to establish our consciousness. In this lesson, we're going to study two major aspects of creativity. Higher mind, spirit. And I want to tell you that just an almost immeasurable increase in understanding of either of these aspects of your higher nature is so important that just that small increase in awareness of either soul or spirit will open up enormous possibilities for personal growth, for change, and for demonstration. This is not only an exciting subject, but I tell you that it offers the possibility for true miracles to occur in your life. And I believe that that's exactly what will happen to more than one person who is seated here at this very moment. Let's take a look at soul first. Now, soul may be the most misunderstood word in the religious or spiritual vocabulary. Usually, when we use the word soul, we're thinking of our psyche. The dictionary defines psyche as the soul or spirit as distinguished from the body, the mind of the psychological person. It's that region that is controlled by the purely intellectual person, the person who is sense-oriented. There's nothing wrong with being sense-oriented. Don't hear that as a disparaging statement. It is a necessary evolutionary part of our growth. But we must grow beyond that understanding that relates itself only to outer things and only to the limited understanding of the earth. Soul is further defined as the animating and vital principle in man, credited with the faculties of thought and action and emotion. In other words, that part of us that we would call the ego or the small self. That's soul spelled with a small s. It's the human personality, the false personality. It's the vacillating, changing part of our human consciousness that separates itself even from the world around it and from the people that it holds dear. It's the persona or the mask. Soul with a small s contains many qualities that are not true or spiritual or permanent. For example, soul with a small s is an angry entity, filled with fear, worry, hate, all kinds of incorrect information about life. It's a programmed state of consciousness. And it's programming that is not always accurate. It's filled with a great deal of misinformation and the consequent reactions that come from all kinds of misinformation. Now, some of its information is fairly accurate, but does not necessarily lead anywhere. It's the part of us that must die. You know, the scriptures are always talking about a self that must be diminished so that there's the other self can be increased. And the other self is soul with a capital S. Soul with a capital S is really a synonym for God or for spirit. If you say soul with a capital S, you're really saying God. Except that soul with a capital S really refers to an attribute or a quality of God or spirit that the intellect does not understand, cannot understand. And so I'm going to ask you to hear with the ears that are not connected with your intellect. Did you follow that? If your intellect hears this, it will not understand it. Soul is that aspect of God by virtue of which God is able to individualize himself. Now, the word individual means undivided. Spirit cannot divide itself. Remember when the scripture said, a house divided against itself cannot stand, cannot exist. Well, God cannot break God's self up into little chunks. God can, but each of those little pieces of God contains all of God. Let's pause for a moment and think of the universe as one living expression of life, and that life is spirit. So therefore, God is everywhere. But how would you like to be everywhere, but nowhere? That would be pretty boring, wouldn't it? If you were everywhere, but could not express at a particular point of where you were, well, God, being infinite, has the capacity to be everywhere, but at the same time that God is everywhere, God can become individualized, meaning can express God's self fully at a particular point in time and space, at the finite level, and that's exactly what soul really means. But when God expresses God's self as soul, all of God expresses at that particular point. So there is not a division. And any and all of the expressions of God are connected, held together, by the one super matrix of spirit. You are soul, and I am soul, capital S. And this means something else that's very important. In this universe, there is no power of evil. There are not two powers. There's not an evil power that spreads itself thinly throughout the universe, and the good power is working against the evil power. No, what appears to be the evil power is the misdirected use of the one power. It's the one power that does not know itself and therefore does not use itself wisely. But don't get hung up on that for a moment. Let's leave that for a moment. The importance of the power of individualization is this. Your real self, the Christ within you, the spiritual person, the I am, the divine spark, as it is variously called, is an individualization of God. You are the presence of God where you are. Now, this doesn't mean that you and I are some prissy little God that's going to create a universe. If there's anyone here who has created a universe, raise your hand. We're not in charge of anything. But the soul of us, the spirit of us, is an expression of God. Remember on Sunday mornings in our service, we repeat a statement of being that says, God is all, both invisible and visible. One presence, one mind, one power is all. This one that is all is perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. Now here is the important statement. I am an individualized expression of God. I am ever one with this perfect life, perfect love, and perfect substance. A person cannot be separated from God in reality. You cannot be. Where can you go and leave the universe? How could you possibly leave the universe when most of the time we cannot get out of our own backyards anyhow? Where could you go and flee my spirit? There's no place. But we have the sense of separation. And that sense of separation comes from soul with a small s. You see, the soul with a small s is a sense-separated entity that does not see God, does not experience God, and hardly sees its brothers. Soul with a capital S understands and experiences that it can never be separated. The belief in separation becomes the experience of separation. And I know that because I spent the first years of my life knowing that I was separated from my good. There was no God. How could I be joined with God when there wasn't one? And I had an experience that was exactly the way I believed the universe to be. Listen to Jesus, the master teacher of higher consciousness, in the 15th chapter of John. Yes, I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever lives in me and I in him shall produce a large crop of fruit. For apart from me, you can't do a thing. Can you imagine a branch of a vine or of a tree believing that it was the whole thing? Or believing that it of itself had strength? Or seeing the fruit that it was bearing took credit for the fruit? That would be a very foolish branch, would it not, if it did not give credit to the trunk of the tree and the roots that went into the ground and the sustaining forces that flowed through it to create the fruit. The fruit is only the product of the vine and the branch working together in perfect harmony. And so it is with us. When we awaken to the realization that there is this pure energy, pure power, pure wisdom, and that we are expressions of it, it's the cause and we are the effect. It's the supplier. It's the creator. We are the created. In the moment of that awakening, a marvelous thing begins to happen. More than just an intellectual satisfaction that comes and an emotional surge of joy and peace that follows. It's more than that. Whoever lives in me and I in him shall produce a large crop of fruit, meaning your life will instantly change and all the things that were not happening in your life will immediately begin to happen. Dramatic, creative processes will transpire. If you have the sense of being alone, you will be alone. But soul is that aspect of God wherein that you never have to be alone. Now, what could this principle or law of individualization mean to you? Well, it's miracle producing if you will seek to understand it and work with it in any area of your life. When you're called upon to perform some task or undertake some responsibility that seems too great for you, for instance, imagine that you received a promotion, or that you changed jobs and you are required to assume responsibilities that you've never done before. You find yourself in a position that you simply do not know how to handle. Or there's a divorce or a death. And you must face an immediate challenge of decisions that are unaccustomed and you don't know which way to go. And the long-range responsibility of supporting a family, and you are simply not equipped to assume those responsibilities. Or, as was the case of someone that called me today, this young man that does not have a job and has been looking for a job and now is frantically searching for a job, and all of his efforts have not been able to connect him with any possibility and the hopelessness and the fear that is there. You do have an understanding of that position, don't you? Well, when you realize that you are an individualized expression of God, instantly, the task becomes our business instead of my business. Your life becomes our business, whatever in whatever area in which you are working. In that moment, your needs become the responsibility of God. It's as though you are a spectator on the 50-yard line of life, and there's a new energy that comes in, a new coach, a new director, a new guide. And while there's a very important role that you have to play, it's not your responsibility. It's God's responsibility. And there's a peace that comes over a person in those moments that is impossible for me to describe. But this is why it's so important to be aware that God not only has the capacity of individualizing God's self, but you are an individualized expression, and that you can never experience anything in your life, any responsibility, any problem, that you don't have the full power of God working with you, providing you believe it. Now, let me give you an example, a classic example. It's a story that you've heard many times. It's the story of David and Goliath. Time does not permit me to go back and read to you the details of Goliath, this huge person, and the armor that he wore, and the lance that he carried. The spear that he used was so long that it would take three of us to carry it. An army sat down in defeat the moment that they gazed upon this fierce warrior. That's Goliath. And here's little David, a shepherd boy. And Goliath looked at him, sneering in contempt at this nice little red-cheeked boy. And he cursed him. "Come over here and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath shouted. David calmly replied, "You come to me with a sword and a spear, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of the armies of heaven and Israel, the very God whom you have defied. I come to you with this higher nature. I come to you in soul. There's more to me than meets the eye. You think I'm a little red-cheeked shepherd boy, don't you? Well, I am. But there's a power in me that is really going to wipe you out, Goliath. Today, the Lord will conquer you, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And Israel will learn that the Lord does not depend on weapons to fulfill his plans. He works without regard to human means." Hope you heard that. You think that Goliath was just a warrior some 5,000 years ago? Goliath is that major problem that confronts you right now. And you have been sitting down on the grass, scared to death, because you hear the clanking of the armor and you see the fierceness that's there. And you don't dare move, hardly a muscle. Ah, Goliath. I will not breathe so that Goliath will not focus Goliath's attention on me. But there is this innocent little red-cheeked spirit that's in you that's willing to form a partnership, that is willing to believe that there is a power that does not have to work with regard to human means. You see, the reason you have a problem is that you've already decided that it cannot work out. You know all the reasons that it will continue to exist. They're clear, absolutely clear. You can envision them with your mind. You know them. You can list them. As a matter of fact, you've probably been talking about them on the telephone today. Goliath. But soul means that God is an individualized expression in you that can do the most remarkable things regardless of the circumstances or the appearance if you will walk fearlessly forward into the problem, practicing the presence of God in you. and not practicing the presence of the problem. Now, one of the most difficult things in all of life to do is to stop practicing the presence of the problem and begin to practice the presence of God. And the moment that you do it, there is a feeling of peace, and you know that you have already conquered or overcome whatever it is that appears to be there, that the solution will come. You can know that. A number of years ago, it was the day of my ordination, and the Silent Unity prayer room at Unity Village was meeting with the ordinands, the ministers to soon to be, and the leader of that group asked us and me what blessing that we would like to receive from Spirit in our ministries. And without thinking, because there was this wave of emotion, and if I think about it, I may not be able to tell you about it. It came over me. I wanted with all of my being to have a healing ministry. A ministry in which people would be touched in whatever ways that their bodies or minds wanted to be touched. And I asked for that, and the moment that I asked, I felt this overwhelming surge of love and of energy that spoke to me, not into my ear, but into my mind, and caused me to believe that this was a gift that was granted. It was soul in me. It was the individualization of God causing me to be brave enough to experience and to accept the fact that not only is this a blessing that's given to mankind, it is a responsibility to believe it. This is one of the last things that the human race will believe. Jesus Christ was crucified in part because he dared to say that he was an individualized expression of God. And I promise you that you can't find one person in a thousand, even the religious people, who will admit or openly say that they believe that this is what they are, and because they are, that they have certain powers. And yet, all the scriptures say, he that is within you is greater than any condition that exists in your world. And I could quote you 100 such scriptures. Well, I had the experience. And do you know that although I don't always remember that blessing, every time that I do, and I have in certain important moments, like I don't ever remember making a hospital call that I did not pause along the way and get into the consciousness of this fact that I am an emissary. I am an individualized expression of God, and that when I speak to that person or when I ask that this healing take place, that something mighty will happen there. And when I get into that feeling, it is pure dynamite. And I say that taking no credit, only saying that you have this power because you are an individualized expression of God. Jesus said, "It is not I, but the Father within me who does his works." And this is the aspect of soul. The Spirit of God working through you to do what you yourself cannot do. But it cannot work unless you believe it. It cannot work unless you practice the presence of it and give credence to it and become excited about it and expect a miracle. Unless you believe in possibilities, believe in solutions, and know, just like David with this little pink-cheeked shepherd boy, dared to predict with an army sitting on the grass what he would do to Goliath. Do you have the intestinal fortitude to walk out into your life, into the serious problems of your life, making that same statement? Now, don't say this in front of your in-laws, because that's the wrong place. But inside your own consciousness, do you dare to believe that you are the emissary, that you were actually created to walk out upon this earth so that the activity of God can take place where you are? If you will try it, you will be absolutely amazed at what will happen to you. Now let's examine the word spirit. If soul means, as it does, all of God individualized in a person, then spirit means all of God everywhere, present. Spirit means allness. But it means the invisible world that we call spirit that underlies all outward manifestation, according to Webster. Real, unchanging essence. The inner nature of a thing that gives it its outer appearance or qualities. Spirit is further defined as God as the moving force of the universe, principle. Spirit is the whole thing and the whole action of God. I know you've heard of the Holy Spirit. Now, the Holy Spirit means the whole Spirit. Does not mean a religious aspect of God that we are not worthy of experiencing because we are not very religious. It merely means that all of God is everywhere present. All of God is there. Holy Spirit. And not only is God present, but God is an activity. God is experienceable. God is all, both invisible and visible. Remember our statement of being? Think of God as being the invisible cause underlying the visible universe. And that all of the forms that you see, all of the planets, all of the stars, all of the galaxies, the infinite variety of life forms upon this earth, infinity, omnipotence, omnipresence, omnipower, that's spirit. Spirit is the cause of all things. Now, we have had difficulty working with spirit because we have spent most of our lives being caught up in that which is material. Material meaning the physical body and all of the forms, all of the outer forms that we see. Now, spirit is that which cannot be destroyed or damaged or hurt or degraded or soiled in any way. It's changeless. Now, here's the paradox, the thing that the intellect has difficulty with. It is changeless. It cannot ever be less than what it is. It can never be more than what it is, because it is already everything that it can ever be. It is changeless in that sense. You cannot add to it, and you cannot take away from it. But our experience changes as we experience more of spirit, as our awareness grows, as we establish our conscious contact with spirit, everything in your life will change. And this is marvelous. You know, it's really a splendid thing that the world is constantly being renewed. And splendid that old things should disappear in order that newer, cleaner, and better things may take their place. Suppose you only got one dress, and that was when you reached puberty, and you had to wear it for the rest of your life, and it never would wear out. Would that be horrendous? And suppose you only had one with this one body, and it stayed exactly the same, and you didn't like it very much going in, but it would never change, and you would have to live in it for eternity, whatever that is. Wouldn't that be boring? Wow, of course it would. Isn't it marvelous that build thee more stately mansions, O my soul, as the swift seasons roll? Here we're back to soul again. Back to this individualized expression of God and spirit. Now remember that in these six lessons, as we talk about the different aspects of God, I'm in a certain sense dividing them up, but you have to constantly be pulling them all back together at the same time, because let's take last week, or the last lesson. We talked about one of the aspects of God as being the power of response, the exquisite responsibility that spirit has to us. It knows us. It has its attention focused on us all the time. It's aware of you. Before you have called, it is answered. Well, this allness, this wholeness, this is a whole universe, is ready to be recognized at any point in time and space that you care to recognize it. And the moment that you recognize it, a mighty thing will happen at that place. Remember the woman at the well, the woman who had five husbands, and Jesus, in speaking to her, and he was not supposed to speak to her because she was one of the forbidden ones, but he did anyhow. And he said, you have five husbands. And she said, I see that you, sir, are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. And Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Meaning, speaking to her in the understanding of that time, he said, God does not just exist in the synagogue or the temple in Jerusalem. And God is not upon this mountain where Moses seemed to find him. You want to go up where Moses found God because that's where God is? You don't understand. God is everywhere present. God is a spirit. God is the invisible energy or force that is back of all of life, and all of God is everywhere. And the moment that you recognize this, astonishing things will happen. You too will be a prophet. You see, the fact that she was married to five men meant that she lived in the sense consciousness, the human intellect. Five marriages. We are married to our five sense mind that does not understand the invisible world of spirit. Now, when we begin to understand spirit, there is an immediate response to those who understand. You are spirit, your body is spiritual, but you are spirit. And spirit cannot die, and it was never born. This is a spiritual universe, and it responds to all of us who recognize it as a living, breathing, moving, responsive, loving, caring, energy-filled entity that we call God, our Creator. Again he entered the synagogue, and a man was there who had a withered hand. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, come here. And he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. Stretch out your mind. It was not so much that the man's hand was withered as it was that the spirit had been perceived. We have many afflictions. And invariably when we do, it's because our spirit is withered at that point. Withered is a good word to use. But if someone of higher consciousness can behold the whole spirit, can see the wholeness that is there, the wholeness will begin to respond. And again, this is not to deny that there was a problem in the first place. Judge not by appearances, but judge righteous judgment, meaning don't be locked into your sense consciousness that only sees what it sees and hears what it hears and tastes what it tastes. There's another dimension, the dimension of power, the dimension of wisdom that will respond, and the moment that you see clearly, there will be a straightening. Stretch out your hand. Stretch out your consciousness. Rise up and go home. People said that Lazarus was dead, and Jesus waited until he did die physically so that he could then call him forth, because he understood that the real Lazarus was spirit. And he said to that spirit, come forth, and it did. I have seen people come alive, not rising up out of the casket, but I have seen people who were dead. And you do know that in the Bible, more often than not, when the word dead or death is used, it refers to the death of your consciousness. I've seen people whose lives were withered, people that had no hope. They had no past, they had no future. And I've seen them come alive. I've seen them stretch out their hand and stretch out their minds and become some of the world's most exciting people. And some of these people that I refer to are here before me now. Krishnamurti, who is a mystic, said, whatever man has done, man can do. I am man and also God in man. I can do this thing and I will. Whatever man has done, man can do. I am man. But I am more than man. I am also God in man. I am soul and I am spirit. I'm an individualized expression of everything that exists. And therefore, whatever it is that I need to do, I can do it. What is it that you need to do in your life? Is there something you need to do? And you tell me that you have been struggling to do it. I know you have. You tell me that you can't do it. You've tried. You've been trying for a long time and you simply can't do it, and so you've stopped trying. You've tried just long enough to prove that of yourself you cannot do it. And that's marvelous. That has brought you to the place of awakening. You can do it if it is a reasonable thing to do. Now, if it is something like deciding that you want to become the Sunday morning soloist to replace Bob Angus, and you've never had a music lesson in your life, that might not be the thing to try. Because that's not a natural thing. That's not the next thing in the order of succession of important things in your life. They're things that you need to do. They're there. You know you need to do them. Everything in you is telling you that you must assume these responsibilities or experience this healing. It's not a pie-in-the-sky thing. It is a normal, in your life, important matter that perhaps has concerned you for a long time. It might deal with your consciousness or with some very real circumstance or condition. Well, I want you to know that it has been done before by someone. It has been done before. There's not one of us here that has ever manufactured a unique problem. All of our problems have been experienced by other people. You know, I'm shockproof. You know, people sometimes come to me and say, I've got to talk to you, Jack, for just a moment, and I know you will not understand this. And I say, lay it on me. And they do. And I already understood it because I have experienced it. I have also experienced, in some measure, the answers to these things. I believe that this is a universe of answers. Do you believe that? Now, do you need to work out some special plans? Do you need to get up from your bed and walk? Do you need to develop a better disposition? Do you need to build an empire or build a company or form a corporation or make arrangements to tide you over just to get you through until tomorrow? What is it that you need to do? Select one thing that you know you need to do and you've never done it because you just did not have the wherewithal to do it. Select that one thing right now. And in this moment, become aware that you are an individualized expression of God, that you have the healing touch, the healing power, that you're a channel, that you've been placed on this earth to prove the power of God in your life in specific ways. And you're willing to go into action facing your Goliath. You're that shepherd boy. You're a magnificent expression of God. And that you have the consciousness for it and the power for it, because God as soul is with you, and God as spirit is wholeness. Wholeness. The fullness of life. The fullness of power. Abraham Maslow continued, finally, what Buck called cosmic consciousness involves an attention widening. An attention widening. Becoming aware of spirit. Practicing the presence of God. So that the whole cosmos is perceived as a unity, and one's place in this whole is simultaneously perceived. In these deeper reaches of experience, some higher power seems to work with us and through us. A larger life continuous with ourselves seems to encompass us. Our own consciousness appears to be only an effective center in a vast spiritual environment which acts along with us. Go out and do the thing that you need to do, and you will have the power to do it, and the wisdom, and the direction, and the guidance, and the divine ecstasy of overcoming and accomplishment. Soul and spirit. The activity of God. That's who you are. That's what you are. And that's the way it really is.
This concludes the lesson on Side A. Now please fast forward to the end and turn the cassette over for the continuation of How to Achieve Higher Consciousness.